Usually, they want them to be a very good performer of wajibat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely, all the religious parents, they expect from their children to be like them. First of all, we should keep in mind, in our mind, always I said, our ahadith, our Holy Prophet and Imam Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, they also said that there is difference between your children and you yourself. لا تقصروا أولادكم على آدابكم فإنه مخلوقون لزمان غير زمانكم. It means do not force your children to do whatever you are doing.
Okay.
And do not compare your children with yourself, with your time. You know? Because they are created in this era, and you have been created, you know, 40, 50, you know, sometimes 60 years before.
So there's a difference of era and time between the parents and the children.
And the demands of each time is totally different.
True.
Yeah. So unfortunately, nowadays, always we say to our children, when I was like you, teenager, I would go to the mosque five times a day, you know,
true,
I would keep, you know, all the fasts, all the wajibat, all the mustahabbat. No, do not compare yourself with your children. They are in a totally different time, and you are in a totally different time when you were a teenager.
True.
So this always we should keep in mind, in our mind. And secondly, as I said so many times, the demand of teenage time is completely, you know, annoying for parents. You know, they become so much, you know, disobedient, and they become rebel. So this also we should keep in our mind. And another thing in tarbiyah, in upbringing, is these wajibat and mustahabbat are not something that you suddenly start teaching your teenager. You should start from 6-7 years, you know. According to the hadith in our previous shows, we have discussed that from 7 to 14, you should start teaching from 7 years.
Yeah, that's what usually nowadays parents face this problem. They don't teach ibadat at the right age. And then
and they expect
from
their teenagers that they have to become.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And another thing is, this is something which is, you know, practical thing. They learn more from you rather than your sayings, whatever you say. Yeah? They, if they see that you are paying attention to these wajibat, you are offering your prayers on time regularly, you fast, then definitely they will learn slowly, slowly.
True.
Yeah, then it will be very, very easy for you to, you know, ask them to pray on time from the teen age. So these are the factors we should consider and we should keep in our mind. And then, inshallah, if you have provided this much good atmosphere for your children, so definitely they will also become good children.
Sure. Thank you so much, Brother Farman, and thank you so much to your audience. Let's take a short break over here.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, when a child becomes intellectually mature and is able to recite parts of the Quran, he should be taught how to pray.
Welcome back to your audience, and before the break we're discussing that the children learn the ibadah from their parents. So this creates an impact, so even the parents need to perform the ibadat so that children learn from them. So Brother Farman, please continue.
Yeah, definitely. Those 3-4 factors I mentioned in our previous discussions, they should always keep in their mind. And they should never ever force their teenagers to perform wajibat. You know, force, you know, destroys. Then maybe at the moment they will pray because of your force, because of your, you know, harshness. But from heart, they will start hating the ibadat.
Uh-huh.
You know, they will hate. So we should be very, very careful, you know. Because as I said, his knowledge is very limited. His experience is very limited. He does not understand that in that level where we understand the importance of ibadah and the thawab and reward. So we have to think according to his thinking, his mindset, and his understanding, number one. And that's why in ahadith also they said, do not use force, you know. You provide with all the facilities, with all the elements which helps him to build a very, very good, you know, thinking and mind for ibadat. Definitely, if parents are pious, they have provided a very, very good atmosphere at home, so it will help them. But God forbid, if they haven't provided this atmosphere at home, then they don't have this right to use force, you know, to offer wajibat and namaz on time. And Islam also, ahadith also never allows them to use force, you know.
So, but what about the wajibat?
Wajibat, in wajibat, you know, you can use little bit force, you know. If you have provided all these conditions, you know, then you have paid your attention, you are respecting him. So rarely it happens
that
they don't perform. Usually they do. But if still they don't perform, then Islam allows to use little bit force. Force in that sense that you can warn him. You know, if you do not pray, then I will not let you play. For example, in very, very rare situations, you can say, I will not give you internet, Wi-Fi, or I will not give you iPad, or, you know, these restrictions you can have. Then definitely when it comes to the playing and iPads, then your children, usually your teenagers, listen to you.
Inshallah. Thank you so much, Brother Farman. And the audience, let's take a short break over here. We'll be right back after that.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
Welcome back, dear audience. And before the break, we were discussing about parents forcing their children for doing the ibadah, for performing the ibadah. So, Brother Farman, please continue.
Yeah, as I said, if you become very harsh towards your teenagers, it will have very, very bad impact in their life also.
Yeah, that's right.
So here again, become polite.
Uh-huh.
If they do not offer wajibat, politely
talk to them. Yeah.
Explain them. And sometimes you can, you know, encourage them. You can say, if you pray, I can give you this gift.
Yeah.
You know? Again, it depends on the situation, on the atmosphere you have provided to your teenager. Yeah, but God forbid, after all these struggles, still they are not offering the wajibat, then Islam says you can become harsh a little bit, and you can punish them. Because wajib is wajib, you know.
Yeah,
so
perform in any way.
In any way, But if by mistake, if they don't forget, they don't offer their wajibat, for example, namaz is the fajr namaz, they do qaza sometimes, then you are not allowed to punish them, you know, because it is not in their hand. Definitely.
So if
they
are
teenagers.
Yeah, performing it purposely, then you can
take
an action.
Take an action. And performing the namaz of fajr, the fajr salah also, Islam always recommends you to provide them a peaceful atmosphere and make them sleep early in the night. Then definitely they can wake up in the
That's right.
fajr and they can easily perform the namaz. So being polite acts like a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were discussing the respect, showing respect towards
true,
them,
showing
love towards them. Likewise, being polite also helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you are polite and if sometimes you ignore them intentionally, it also helps them to understand that what kind of mistake they have done. And as I said, they have a pure, clean heart, and they feel guilty very quickly. Ahadith also, as I mentioned, one of the beautiful ahadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, qalbu shabbi araq. Araq means raqiq, very soft heart they have. Although by face they look like they are very rude, very angry, but their
still
heart,
they're soft from inside.
Heart is very, very soft, and they feel very quickly guilty. So they are very emotional because of this soft heart, you know.
Yeah.
That's why they cry very quickly. If, you know, boys maybe they don't show. If you have a teenager boy, maybe in front of you he will not cry, but he is very, very emotional. He expresses his emotions very quickly. So being polite with him will have a great effect in his life and in his practical life and for performing wajibat also.
Thank you so much, Brother Farman, and thank you so much, dear audience, for staying with us. So in this program, the question was, how should the parents deal if their children are not performing the wajibat or the ibadat? So first, we said that the parents need to understand that there's a difference in the era of the children and the parents themselves. And the other thing which we said was that they need to teach them at the right age. If they don't teach them at the right age, then they'll get into problem later on. And we said that the children learn from their parents. So the parents themselves should perform their wajibat on time so that the children learn from them. And we also said that we need to teach them and help them. We cannot force them, as Islam doesn't allow us to apply force on them. So we need to teach them and we need to be polite with them and we need to handle them the right way because they are really soft and emotional. Thank you so much, Brother Farman, and thank you so much, dear audience, for staying with us. And if you have any questions, comments or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, farstoday.com. Until another program, fi amanullah.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Proper Nutrition with Brother Sayyid Vahid Alavi in the program The Month of Allah.
Assalamu alaikum everyone, this is Sayyid Vahid and welcome to The Month of Allah. In this program, which is the last program on the last day of the holy month of Allah, Ramadan, I will talk about the food items that you should try to avoid. And yes, I know it's the last day, but you can continue with the same food items and the same recommendations, the same tips, even after Eid al-Fitr, even after Ramadan and during the whole year. Inshallah ta'ala, we will take with us all these tips after Ramadan, inshallah ta'ala. So the foods that you should try to avoid. Number one, frying and fatty, oily food items. Number two, food rich in sugar. Number three, eating a lot of food, especially at dawn, at the Sahari time. Number four, drinking a lot of tea. Try to avoid drinking a lot of tea, especially during dawn. Tea boosts your urination and thereby eliminating the mineral salts that your body need. Number five, cigarettes should be avoided completely. If you cannot stop smoking, try to reduce the consumption gradually before the holy month of Ramadan. What foods to eat? Consumption of carbohydrates in Sahari time at dawn is especially recommended. It has a longer digestion and it causes less hunger. And you have porridge. Porridge is an excellent source of protein and it is one of the foods that are digested late. And dates are an excellent example of a natural source of sugar, fiber, carbohydrates, and magnesium. It has all of these things in it. And you have almond. The almond is rich in salts, especially calcium and fiber. And you have the banana among all of the fruits, which is rich in magnesium and carbohydrates. Excessive consumption of water or juice in the interval between the iftar and your sleep will provide the water that your body needs. So try to drink a lot a couple of hours after your iftar, and that would be very useful for your body. This was the last program of nutrition tips during the holy month of Ramadan. I hope that you will continue with the same nutrition tips after the holy month of Ramadan and during the whole year. And this time I would not say Ramadan Kareem, but Eid al-Fitr Mubarak.
وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
Dark Review.
Hello and welcome to Doc Review with me, Camelia Shambayati. In today's show, we're discussing Cowspiracy, directed by Kit Anderson and Keegan Coon. And joining me in the studio, we have Maria Duarte, who is a film critic for the Morning Star newspaper and who has also worked as a news journalist. And beside her is Anthony Hamilton, who is a vegan, SWP member and student activist. Now, Cowspiracy is a groundbreaking documentary that contends that industrial animal agriculture is the leading cause of deforestation, water consumption, pollution, and even plays a far greater role in global warming than the transportation industry. Cowspiracy manages to expose the capitalist nature and the privatization of the Western food industry, which seeks to protect private company owners and large environmental groups that link back to Congress.
Do you think there should be any concern of us making this documentary?
Of course. If you don't realize right now that you're putting your neck on the chopping block, you know, you better take that camera and throw it away.
It's an environmental disaster that's being ignored by the very people who should be championing.
Let's look at the fundamental problem here.
No one wants to talk about it.
Because they're membership organizations, you know, a lot of them. They're looking to maximize the number of people making contributions.
The leading cause of environmental degradation is...
We need to address that as well.
It's not up to the Department of Water Resources.
Hard to actually target, like, one thing.
I don't necessarily know what it is.
There's suppression and mismanagement of information everywhere, it abounds.
It starts at the local level, but then it goes all the way to Congress.
When you consider the devastation it's having on our planet as well as the oceans.
And we're in the middle of the largest mass extinction of species in 65 million years.
And they can dictate the federal policies because they have so much political power.
And one of the largest industries on the planet, with biggest environmental impact, trying to keep us in the dark about how it's operating.
That's the one thing no one talks about. Everybody goes around that.
Unfortunately, we are no longer able to fund your film project. We had a meeting, and due to the growing controversial subject matter, we have some concerns that we have to pull out.
You're going up against people that have massive legal resources, and you have nothing.
A lot of people just keep their mouths shut because they don't want to be the next one with a bullet to their head.
I don't know that I would want to comment on that.
Well, welcome both of you to the show. Thanks very much for coming on. And I must say, I found this documentary to be very shocking, thought-provoking, and disturbing all at the same time. And you really do feel a great sense of urgency after watching this documentary to address environmental issues. Maria, if I could start with you as our guest film critic. This documentary was re-released a few years ago, but it's still highly watched and highly relevant to today. What was your take on it?
Well, very much so. And everything that you've mentioned, that and all the above and more, really. And it's quite an impressive first-time feature for these guys. And what they do, which is really interesting, is rather than going for meat-eaters and putting them off, which is the obvious thing, they go for the environmental agencies and groups and basically question them as to why they aren't campaigning about this issue, which is greatly affects global warming. I mean, it's pretty shocking. What they also do is, through humour and... sparing shock tactics, get the message across too.
Also on a personal journey, as we learn watching this documentary. He gets very involved, and I thought that was a good style.
Yeah, we've seen it with Michael Moore, but here it's less about him and more about keeping on point and on the question. And some of the stuff is really jaw-dropping.
We'll see that a bit later on. And Anthony, what was your take on the film?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. Like you said, about the lack of shock tactics really then allows you to engage in it without feeling as if you're morally obliged to, you know, have to straight away get behind it without seeing the facts and figures and everything like that. So I thought in that sense, you know, it was quite good. It was very critical of the charities, of the people who are supposed to be doing something about this. It was very critical about the lobbyists as well behind it, trying to show the systematic nature of what's going on. I also do think there were a few problems with it. He does seem to pose a lot of the climate change activists against a lot of what he's actually trying to find out, which I think is, you know, a dangerous thing to fall into. In that he seems to target the people who are challenging climate change already, and the, you know, activists against fossil fuels and things like this, as being part of the problem because they're not acknowledging so much the stuff around the agriculture industry. And I think it's a bit of a problem. A better way to do it would be to actually link the two together and say this should be a united fight.
But of course he implies in the documentary that they're sort of in cahoots perhaps behind the scenes with the political establishment, and that's why they're afraid to speak on this issue. But we'll talk about that a bit more later on as we show that clips in regard to that part of the program. So Maria, if I could just turn to you. Do you think, before watching this documentary, were you aware that the animal agriculture industry had such a profound effect on global warming?
No, I wasn't. And having seen Al Gore's two films, even less so, because he doesn't tackle it either. And in the film, he is the main inspiration for Kip Anderson. And if this is as important, as huge as these filmmakers are saying, and the film is trying to say, then why aren't the likes of Al Gore tackling this or mentioning it, even just one line in his two films?
And Anthony, I mean, before we move on to our next clip, do you think this documentary at least makes meat eaters think twice and think about becoming vegan perhaps?
Yeah, I think it definitely has that, because it shows about, you know, there's a lot of talk about individual responsibility and things like that, but it does break it down in quite very obvious terms, uses a lot of nice infographs and stuff, which actually shows your impact on the world, the impact of the meat industry and so on. So I think it does actually, it's really good at exposing that and actually showing people the evidence and letting them make their choice for themselves as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to leave it there just for now.
Clearly, the government did not want to talk about this issue. Their inability to answer, along with the environmental organization's silence on the topic of animal agriculture, made it seem something more was going on. I started doing more investigating on the impacts of livestock and found out the situation was actually worse than I had thought. In 2009, two advisors from the World Bank released an analysis on human-induced greenhouse gases, finding that animal agriculture was responsible not for 18%, as the UN stated, but was actually 51% of all greenhouse gases. 51%. Yet all we hear about is burning fossil fuels. This devastating figure is due to clear-cutting rainforests for grazing, respiration, and all the waste animals produce. This makes animal agriculture the number one contributor to human-caused climate change. But not only that, I found out raising animals for food consumes a third of all the planet's fresh water, occupies up to 45% of the Earth's land, is responsible for up to 91% of Amazon destruction, is a leading cause of species extinction, ocean dead zones, and habitat destruction. Yet, the world's largest environmental groups that are supposed to be saving our world didn't mention this anywhere. I had to speak with environmental organizations to find out why they weren't addressing this issue.
Really some mind-boggling statistics there. Maria, if we could go back to you, do you think the filmmakers were successful in this film in conveying the threats the environment is under?
I think they were. For me, the most shocking was the fact that Greenpeace wouldn't speak to Kip Anderson, which is just mind-boggling. And why these organisations aren't fighting or bringing these subjects onto, you know, tackling the government over it, but that sort of Michael Moore-ish type sort of assault on the Greenpeace's offices spoke volumes. And then the emails that the correspondence that he received saying, oh, we're not this time, you know, not we can't help you this time, you know, when this is, you know, a great opportunity for them to talk out, you know, to speak out and say something.
And Anthony, if I could turn to you now and to address the issues, the main issues raised in this documentary. Of course, what is the link between the animal industrial agriculture industry and also the impact it has on global warming?
Well, I mean, a lot of what was just shown in that clip there, you know, the deforestation, the destruction of habitats, the species extinction, all of these things contribute in a major way. And if you consider this industry, it is an industry. It has, you know, huge, huge amounts of waste, huge amounts of pollution, huge amounts of taking up land simply to grow crops to feed the animals who also take up land as well. It's an incredibly destructive cycle that actually does, you know, I mean, it was very interesting when he spoke to the Oceana person and they said about ethical fishing and so on, but I mean, when he talks, he goes through it in detail, there's not really such a thing as the sustainable fishing which they talk about. Mm-hmm. Every which way in which the industry constantly expands is destructive.
Mm-hmm. It is a myth, that's what he suggests in the documentary, which is surprising to hear. So are you suggesting, is there a link between capitalism and global warming? I mean, do you think it's our over-consumerist society that is to blame for all these unsustainable methods we're taking?
Absolutely. And if you think about the entire fundamental point in capitalism is about overproduction. It's about constant expansion, finding new fields and areas to be able to conquer and dominate and sell to people. And if you look at the meat industry, the agriculture industry, it is one of those industries which is just growing bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And, you know, with globalization comes that then domination of the globe with this, you know, huge empire behind it, huge amount of lobbyists, money. I think that's, you know, he goes and challenges a lot of the leaders of, like you said, Greenpeace and so on. I think that's brilliant because holding them to account over it really shows the power that this industry has behind it as well.
Maria, do you think the filmmaker puts off people who eat meat from taking part in helping the environment, or do you think he does it in a way that's clever for us to help the environment?
No, I think he was quite clever in the way he put it across, because we've seen in other films, you know, where, you know, you see these animals and the way they're treated and in humane conditions and everything. But here he's showing what the consequences are and the effects to us and to our planet and what we're doing, and it does make you sort of self-conscious about it. And I think meat eaters will think twice whether or not they'll turn vegan is another matter, but they will take a harder look at what we're doing to our planet.
I mean, we're told constantly to use less water, to change our light bulbs, to recycle. And Anthony, I mean, shouldn't the onus be on the people in positions of power rather than the individual to help combat climate change?
Completely. I mean, the idea about just doing small individual things like taking shorter showers and switching off lights and things, while, you know, it is a good activity to get into, it's not going to create the fundamental change which is actually going to save the planet. The fundamental change needs to come from these mass organisations. It actually needs to come from system change in reality, because the way in which this industry is set up, it is to make profit, it is to expand, and it is to not look at the side effects of what they're actually creating, the consequences, which is, you know, constant heating of the globe, constant destruction of rainforests and so on.
And as this documentary suggests also, when you're up against this mass production machine, it's really futile trying to help the environment on an individual level.
I couldn't understand why the world's largest environmental organizations were not addressing this when their entire mission is to help protect the environment.
But that's the thing, too, as they say, you know, you use less coal, ride your bike,
Yeah, I think they think it's. I think they focus grouped it, and it's a political loser. In terms of because they're membership organizations, you know, a lot of them. They're looking to maximize the number of people making contributions, and if they get identified as being anti-meat or challenging people on their everyday habits, that's something that's so dear to people that it will hurt with their fundraising.
They do not want to address the primary driving cause of environmental devastation, which is animal agriculture, because they're businesses and they want to make sure that they have a reliable source of funding.
I had invited to a meeting with Al Gore and some years ago now, and made these methane arguments, and he was really pushback. And that's just his argument. It's hard enough to get people to think about CO2. Don't confuse them.
I think that the problem with a lot of organizations that are focused and have a laser focus don't go off message because they don't want to piss off another whole group of people that will make their lives difficult.
Maria, so if animal agriculture is a leading cause of global warming, why has there been so much silence about this issue? I mean, do you think, as the documentary suggests, there's a conspiracy or cowspiracy happening here?
Well, clearly something's happening, and there's a lot of invested interest, according to the film, because the fact that environmental agencies aren't taking up the cause, and that comment about Al Gore was priceless. You know, he's in a great position to have included that in his follow-up to An Inconvenient Truth in An Inconvenient Sequel, and he didn't touch it.
They mentioned that in this documentary, actually, that even Al Gore allegedly didn't want to go there as a politician who knew that it wouldn't help the cause.
But you have to make it the cause. That's what I couldn't get my head around, you know. And that's the thing about this filmmaker. He keeps on message and he keeps telling you this. And he keeps showing you, talking to all these different organizations. You know, I understand lobbyists. That's a, I would expect that from them and to a certain extent from the government. But from environmental groups, you know, that was the shocker.
I was very surprised to watch that also. And Anthony, do you think, as the documentary suggests, that major environmental groups are purposefully turning a blind eye to the effects of animal agriculture on the environment? I mean, do you think they have any vested interests?
It seemed that way. I mean, from the people he tried to talk to, it was constantly evading his questions. There were times when people, they just went silent and couldn't actually answer his questions. You could tell that they wanted to say something, but it was as if something was stopping them. And I think, you know, there is an unseen power that lies behind these industries, where that pressure, that level of fear that the charities hold over being able to speak out about it is clearly an incredibly pressing issue on them. And I think at the heart of it, one of the things which someone said in the VT just there was that they are businesses and they have funding. And if you look at Kip making this film, he had his funding pulled halfway through the film because they said it was becoming too controversial. You know, as soon as these people, the agriculture industry, feels as if something is going to crush their profits and stop their profits in any way, they straight away jump on top of it and stop it from happening.
And another
interesting was that he tackles one of the pro-agriculture people and says, have you invested money? Have you funded Greenpeace or one of those organisations? And she, like, stops dead and says, I'd rather not answer that question, or something along those lines, which kind of suggests that they do.
It speaks volumes. Well, so either they plead ignorance or they're trying to hide something. And Maria, one of the other shocking things we find out from this documentary is the food disparagement law, which effectively gags people from speaking out against the animal industry. In several states, it's a law that makes it easy for food producers to sue their critics for libel. So who knew speaking against the beef industry would land you in so much trouble?
Indeed, yes, that's $64,000 question. The fact that they went after Oprah and lost, again, speaks volumes to a certain extent. And the fact that she was sued along with Howard Lyman, who says in the film that if that had happened now, speaking the truth, he would have been, he would have lost
the case. He would have lost, yes. So he's probably lucky that Oprah was behind him on that.
Exactly, or that the Patriot Act wasn't around at that time, maybe.
Were you surprised to know this also, Anthony?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the person who was sued as well alongside Oprah, he himself had ran a farm.
A massive
farm. And it was him who then actually realised what was going on behind the scenes and tried to speak out about it, just speaking the truth. Mm. And straight away it was clamped down on. And obviously he doing that was an individual. Then it becomes the onus of what are these organisations doing actually. They have the clout behind them. They have the membership. They have the power to do something. So it does actually make you think what is going on behind the scenes.
We'll have to pause you there for now.
The animal agriculture industry is one of the most powerful industries on the planet. I think most people in this country are aware of the influence of money and industry on politics, and we really see that clearly on display with this industry in particular. Most people would be shocked to learn that animal rights and environmental activists are the number one domestic terrorism threat, according to the FBI.
And why is that?
It's a difficult question to answer, why these groups are at the top of the FBI's priorities. I think a big part of it is that they, more than really any other social movements today, are directly threatening corporate profits. You know, when we try to find out how factory farms and how animal agriculture is putting the environment, they try to claim exemptions to that information, either under national security terms or public safety, trademark issues, business. It's a business secret. We've seen all these attempts to keep people in the dark about what they're actually doing. You know, one of the largest industries on the planet with the biggest environmental impact, trying to keep us in the dark about how it's operating. Through the Freedom of Information Act, we obtained documents from the Counterterrorism Unit that show they were monitoring my lectures, media interviews like this one, my website, my book.
Are we at risk filming this and showing it?
You're going up against people that have massive legal resources. I mean, it's just overwhelming, the amount of money at their disposal, and you have nothing. And I think that fear is a big part of the tactic as well.
Will was right. I was scared. When I learned about the activists being killed in Brazil, I was disturbed, but I felt removed. But to learn about American activists and journalists being targeted by the industry and FBI, my funding being dropped, I was genuinely worried, and it hit close to home. Was this why no one was willing to talk about the issue? I decided to take precautionary measures with all the footage I shot.
We also learn from the documentary that at least 1,000 environmental activists have been killed in Brazil over the last 20 years. Maria, we see Kip Anderson becoming increasingly more nervous and paranoid in the making of this documentary because of what he's up against as he digs deeper. Do you think the filmmakers were brave in making this film?
In some ways, yes. Because once you've put your head above the parapet, then, you know, you're in that danger zone. And it's something that's very important and it's critical that people know about it. So, you know, kudos to them and to him to carry on with making this film, because it's such a vitally important subject. You know.
Do you really think that their lives were at risk, or were they dramatising it, perhaps?
It's hard to say. The fact that the funding was removed, and the fact that the FBI apparently, you know, targets journalists, isn't a surprise as such. But I don't know that. Verdict's still out on that one.
And Anthony, we hear that according to the FBI, environmental and animal rights activists are considered the number one domestic threat. Why are you surprised to know this?
I was incredibly surprised, yeah. I mean, given how explosive the world has become, given how turbulent the times that we live in are, if you consider, I mean, you know, this film was made a few years ago, but there are still so many other pressing issues, where there are mass movements about it, where there are protest groups, where there's everything. It's a surprise to see environmental activists and you know, activists against the agriculture industry being up there at the top. I mean, a lot of the time these are people who are in small groups until it breaks through into a much larger thing, like maybe the People's Climate March and that sort of stuff. But until that happens, they're very small groups of people, so it is quite a shocking thing to hear.
I want to bring in Donald Trump now as we end near the end of the program. I mean, he's been criticized for not taking climate change seriously, and he has a record of making some bold tweets, and he's even claimed in one tweet that perhaps China is responsible for global warming as some sort of conspiracy against the US. Anthony, what do you make of Trump's environmental policies?
I mean, I just don't think he knows what he's talking about, really. He has access to a social media account which has possibly the biggest platform in the world right now, and he's able to say whatever he wants, whatever pops into his head at any time without listening to any advisors. And really, it just seems like he doesn't know anything that he's talking about, and everything is always an external enemy. He never does anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with the United States. You know, when it comes to Kim Jong-un and North Korea as well, it's them who are the aggressive ones with the missiles and everything like that. So it's always, there's someone else that's the problem, and it's he's never able to look inwards.
And Mary, what would you say the ultimate message of this documentary is?
Well, that we should all turn vegan, really, if we want to save the planet.
So cutting out meat or eating less is not enough, apparently.
Apparently not.
To reverse the damage that has been caused. Well, I'm afraid it was a really great discussion, but we'll have to leave it there for now. And that's it for this episode of Doc Review. And thank you to both my guests and to you. I've been Camila Shambiati.
Gifted and Safi, Ramadan Mubarak, Holy Records.
Ramadan Mubarak, لكل مسلم, شهر الذي فيها ينزل القرآن. Happy Ramadan to all Muslims. All the Quran descends in this holy month.
Insights into the Holy Quran, a special program for the holy month of Ramadan.
Welcome you, O holy man of blessings. Oh, yeah. You are seek nearness to my Creator. For you, my soul and heart has been purified.
Oh,
Muslim,
the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. This is a special program for the holy month of Ramadan. In today's program, Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi explains some verses related to this blessed month. Please stay with us.
O month of mercy, you bring so much good. We pray that it never ends. But we know you gotta go as the seasons come and go, 'cause your time is set by Allah. Oh Ramadan, oh Ramadan, you're the month of the noble Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. We're going to be with you in this holy month of Ramadan, talking about the different verses of the Holy Quran regarding the benefits of fasting, the most important of them, piety or taqwa. We'll be with you again after you have listened to some verses of the Holy Quran regarding fasting.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام كما كتب على الذين من قبلكم لعلكم تتقون.
O you who have believed, decreed upon you is fasting as it was decreed upon those before you, that you may become righteous.
Brothers and sisters, with regard to this verse of the Holy Quran, وَاسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ وَإِنَّهَا لَكَبِيرَةٌ إِلَّا عَلَى الْخَاشِعِينَ. We have had so many traditions that have interpreted the word patience in the ayah as fasting, and seek Allah's assistance with patience and prayer. And truly, it is extremely heavy and hard, except for those who are having full submission. We understood that not just the Holy Quran, but also according to many hadiths, all revelations occurred during fasting and during month of Ramadan. So there must be a reason, which is important in the case of relationship between spirituality of fasting and the revelations. Fasting, with the intention of closeness to God, can ascend one from the kingdom of animals to the realm of angels, and most importantly, it can help him achieve piety. لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ, the verse says. And piety, in simple terms, is the good end. I mean, what else can we be trying to achieve in this holy month? God says, الْأَخِلَّاءُ يَوْمَئِذٍ بَعْضُهُمْ لِبَعْضٍ عَدُوٌّ إِلَّا الْمُتَّقِينَ. On the day of judgment, the friends on that day are enemies to one another, except those who guard against evil. In this world, friendships are based on worldly gains with no real aim, or they are not for the sake of God at least. Obviously, all friendships will come to an end, save those which are for the sake of God. A feature of the pious in this relation, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has been reported as saying, brothers are of three kinds, one who is fair to himself, the second one is such with his wealth, and they are truthful in friendship, and the third kind is the one who takes from you whatever he needs, and he likes you for fun. You should not trust him.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
شهر رمضان الذي أنزل فيه القرآن هدى للناس
للناس وبينات من الهدى والفرقان فمن شهد منكم الشهر فليصم ومن كان مريضا أو على سفر فعدة من أيام أخر يريد الله بكم اليسر ولا يريد بكم العسر ولتكملوا العدة ولتكبروا الله على ما هداكم ولعلكم تشكرون.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it. And whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you. And perhaps you will be grateful.
As you can see, piety is counted as one of the factors of choosing friends. But what I'm trying to say here is that the Lord of the universe has introduced piety as a means of reaching good end and salvation. When he says to his Prophet ﷺ, and enjoin prayer on your people and steadily adhere to it, we do not ask you for sustenance, and we do give you sustenance, and the good end is for guarding. This refers to the fact that piety is cure for all. Piety is a wealth that only the true servants of the Almighty Allah have the opportunity to get to. The ones who are true servants of Allah, let their eyes, let their ears, and let all their body parts fast. And this kind of fasting means that they detach themselves and all their body parts from all other than Almighty Allah. And I assume it's not wrong that if we claim to say that the true guest of the Almighty Allah in this month is the faster at this stage. This level of fasting has got piety. Piety has got invisible assistance. It has got salvation. It has got heavenly blessings. It has got paradise beneath which rivers flow. This is what causes the sinful acts to be removed. This is what causes the man to reach a higher rank, a superior stage. And as the Holy Quran suggests, the pious are at ease. So we must try to reach this state. We must try and do our best to engage all our organs in fasting so we can be from among the true believers. And only then we are described as the patient ones. I mean, the ultimate purpose of servitude to God is a visit of God, as the 46th verse of chapter Baqarah suggests. الَّذِينَ يَظُنُّونَ أَنَّهُمْ مُلَاقُوا رَبِّهِمْ وَأَنَّهُمْ إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ. Who are certain that they are going to meet their Lord, and that unto Him they are going to return. May the Almighty Allah help us to be from among the pious by being from among the true fasters in this month. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to us. If you have any question or comment, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at farstoday.com. May Allah accept your deeds in this holy month of Ramadan, and please include all Muslims in your prayers. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Allah, please forgive us and guide us to paradise. Ramadan is here, Allah's mercy is near. Time to give, time to share, time to show we care. 'Cause Ramadan is here.
Oh.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Nasir Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
فکر کنم ما به 4-5 شکل نسبت به قرآن ادهان و سستی داریم.
We people take the Holy Quran lightly for several reasons. Sometimes we cannot recite the Quran properly. Now in this case, we can see many students and experts with various skills who are unable to read out the Quran properly. Dear brothers and sisters, just look at the last verse of Surah Muzzammil to see how important the position of the Quran is. In this verse, Allah recalls people one time about Salat and one time about Zakat, but two times about the Holy Quran. The exact wording is this. So recite as much